Hashtag Tim and Friends. Of course, I go by the name of the kid, Famous. You and I are tuned in to the Tim and Friends show. Hello, education, entertainment, coast to coast. Ball it up, call it entertainment. Let's get this started. Uncle Tim, let's start this show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
Added sound effects today.
You did.
Top dance.
Dance moves. Thankfully, you weren't TikToking or WhatsApping or Snapchatting or IG storying as we started the show. I am Donovan Bennett. It is hump day. He is Jesse Rubinoff. He tries to distract me when I start the show, but I will not be deterred.
No giggle today.
No giggle today. All business, because it is a jam-packed show. Welcome to Tim and Friends once again with no Tim, which I'm sure you've noticed by now. Tim McAuliffe is on vacation. He will return next week. In the meantime, if you miss him, just watch old reruns of the show. I know you have them on PVR. It's me and the homie, Jesse Rubinoff. Jesse, busy, busy day.
Yes, lots to get to.
Lots to get to.
Yeah.
Is there one story, as you are so excited, you're giggling and dancing away, that you're looking forward to breaking into?
Nah, not particularly. I'm just kind of rattled that it's December, to be honest with you.
Fair.
Like, snow is on the ground now. Still haven't put my winter tires on. No, Tim and I talked about that a couple of weeks ago.
You don't go all seasons?
I don't go all seasons. And Tim said, like, 30% of, I forgot what the stat was, but like 30% of people don't put winter tires on or something. Maybe even 30% do put winter tires
insurance
on.
Insurance broker in his spare time? How does he know that?
I don't know how he just came up
works
with that.
Works for CAA?
Yeah, he came up with the stat like right off the top of the dome, too. I was like, wow, dude.
Guaranteed,
very impressive.
Guaranteed lie. He made it up.
We'll have to clarify with him. We don't want to disparage him while he's not here to defend himself, but like, yeah, he pulled it and it was very impressive at the time. But yeah, it's December, so that kind of sucks. But whatever. Let's rally.
So, we busy show, but I want to know from you and from the Tim and Citizens, things that are now permissible because it's December.
Mm.
Eggnog. Like, can you go eggnog before December 1?
You can do whatever you want. Like, Starbucks starts playing Christmas music in, like, July. Like, you can do whatever you want. There's no rules anymore. There's no rules in society. Play Christmas music wherever you want. Mariah Carey, sure. Play it in, like, May. Who cares? Do whatever you want to do, Canada. Whatever you're feeling, you do that.
Okay.
Right?
I feel empowered now.
Yeah.
So I guess Christmas decorations are fine before December?
Yeah. As soon as, what I will say is that, like, Halloween decorations are a thing, right? And then as soon as those are done, as soon as Halloween comes and goes, Christmas lights are already up. In fact, I saw Christmas lights this year before Halloween was even over, so. That just shows you how things are going.
Or you could be like my grandparents and just never take them down. We have a busy show, as I said. Full 2 hours, myself and Jesse will be with you on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 360 today. But hey, if, as I said before, you're missing Uncle Timmy, just hit up the Netflix-like archive of Tim and Friends on Sportsnet now, where there are ballparking at hundreds of episodes featuring Tim. They're available for you there. As for today, though, we've got you set for a night in the NHL that should be a great one, including Nazem Kadri and the Avs taking on the very red-hot Leafs, which we're about to talk about. And it's always appointment viewing when you got Sidney Crosby and Connor McDavid going head-to-head. Justin Bourne, the Bourne Identity, will stop by this studio, and Elliot Friedman will join us for not fully 32 thoughts, but a bunch of them. Plus, we're going to go live to Toronto and Edmonton to preview tonight's matchups. We're also going to have, because it is a super busy day, the latest from Major League Baseball free agency. We got a lockout set to begin at midnight tonight. We'll talk about that with Shai Davidi in just a few minutes. And the story for me of the day, WTA is taking a real hard stance against the Chinese government, announcing today they are suspending all events in China over concern for the safety of former Grand Slam doubles champion Peng Shuai. John Wertheim of Sports Illustrated and 60 Minutes will help us put all of that into context. It's such a fluid situation. Plenty to get to, so let's not waste any more time about Christmas decorations. Jesse, do your thing with the drop that Bad Boy Entertainment is going to get mad at us. Boom.
First things first.
Don't draw attention to it.
Okay, my bad. Sorry, Puffy.
Okay, Deej mentioned it. It's a big night of hockey on the network tonight. The Maple Leafs face arguably their toughest test of the season when they host Nazem Kadri and the Avalanche on Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. Colorado has won 7 of their last 8 games, and that's without Nathan MacKinnon, who will return from a lower body injury tonight. Meanwhile, the Leafs have won 14 of their last 16 games and are coming off the best month in franchise history heading into this year. A lot of people were saying that it didn't matter what the Leafs did in the regular season, so how much does their recent success actually matter, DJ?
I mean, it matters to me, certainly.
Right.
But to the fans, which I believe the genesis of that question, 0-0-0, as Sam Mitchell famously once said. Listen, I talked earlier in the week about how Blue Jays fans were a little Janet Jackson, right?
Yeah.
What have you done for me lately? Leafs fans, there are more like waiting to exhale soundtracked, right? They've been in a relationship for 11 years, some of them longer, some of them since the 60s. And they are really not wanting to cry anymore, as Mary J. Blige famous
references.
Says. Well, I'm not gonna cry, I'm not gonna cry. And I'm not gonna sing because I wanna host the rest of the show. They don't care what happens. And you know what solidified that? Amazon.
Mm.
Because they saw all of the highs and the good vibes and the celebrations in the locker room, and they knew the ending, and it hurt to watch. So I don't think they're going to be emotionally invested in a month in November that tied the record for best ever in the league, because they're worried about those spring months and how this team plays then. I think they're set up to play well then, but I think Leafs fans right now are Missouri. They're in the Show Me State.
Nice. Oh, you're on fire there with all those references. Look, I just feel like it's kind of an unfair spot for the Maple Leafs, because we talk all the time about how the regular season doesn't matter, but then say they lose 3 or 4 or 5 in a row. We're hammering them. People are calling them frauds. Like, people are just waiting for them to not play well. And here they are, basically with the best record in the league and percentage points difference. And they've won 14 of 16. Literally every facet of the game, they are playing well. They are scoring. They are great on special teams. Their goaltending has been ridiculous. Everything has been good. Yet people are just waiting for them to crumble. And I know nobody like feels sorry for multi-million-dollar athletes. But at some point, like, this is an entertainment business. And if you're a Leaf fan that's just sitting and waiting until April, like, you're not going to enjoy this. So part of me is like, enjoy the ride here and appreciate what you have in what is clearly a very good hockey team, whether it's a very good regular season or very good hockey team in general. That remains to be seen. But there's a lot of runway here. And part of me says, enjoy the ride because they're really good. Why not, right?
Yeah, well, you know why the regular season matters?
Because
you know who you don't want to see in the first round? Florida.
Right.
Or Tampa Bay. Oh, nice. Now, facing an 8 seed in the Montreal Habs last year.
Didn't work either.
Didn't work.
No.
But you'd prefer a theoretically easier path, no question.
Yeah. So Nazem Kadri, we discussed there, you touched on it off the top, comes back tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Do we think that maybe the Leafs would want to revisit this trade? I know as good as the Leafs are right now, 14 of 16, it is worth the conversation because he was traded in 2019 for reasons that make a lot of sense. He was in the press box during the playoffs, seemed like every single year because he did something silly on the ice. But that deal ends up being Tyson Barrie and Alex Kerfoot coming back the other way. Barrie leaves in free agency, didn't really fit in with the Maple Leafs. And Kerfoot, the production simply has not been the same as what Kadri has been doing with the Colorado Avalanche. Different circumstances, but do you think the Leafs miss Kadri at all here? It's hard to argue when they've won 14 of 16, but he's still a very good hockey player. That's my point.
It's still a very good hockey player, but he's in a contract year.
Yes.
And
famous.
I'm not saying he's playing well because of it, because those numbers are crazy. Fourth in the league, 27 points. But this is a group that you are struggling to keep together because of the fiscal dollars that you're paying for your top six forwards. And if you added another player into that conversation, he wouldn't be here long-term anyway. So, no, I don't think you should be crying over the spilled milk over the fact that he really has carried this team in the 8 games since, you know, Nathan MacKinnon has been out of the lineup. Because if he stayed, someone else would have had to go. And you tell me, I mean, it's obviously not Austin Matthews, but whether it's William Nylander? Would you make that trade right now? So I don't think he'd be putting up these numbers in this city because he wouldn't be getting the ice time or the role and responsibility.
Good for him. Gonna get paid at the end of the year if he continues.
Go
this
ahead.
Out. Another contract. Well, I mean, he deserves a big contract because he's never really had one. He did take a discount when he signed with the Leafs originally. So good for Nazem Kadri. Okay, later tonight we've got another great matchup on the network. It's Sidney Crosby and the Penguins visit Connor McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers. A win tonight would give Edmonton the best points percentage in the National Hockey League, but they're down another defenseman after Cody Ceci was placed in COVID protocol, with Darnell Nurse, Duncan Keith, and Slater Cuckoo already out. Now back to Crosby and McDavid. This will be the eighth time they've gone head-to-head in their careers. McDavid has the edge in scoring with points, but Crosby's Pens have gone 6-0-1 in their last seven meetings, or in their seven meetings. Many consider Crosby to be the fifth greatest player of all time, depending on who you talk to. What will McDavid need to do to surpass him in the NHL's GOAT conversation?
Well, it's going to be tough to surpass him internationally because theoretically, assuming NHL players go to the Olympics, whenever McDavid wins a medal, Crosby will be having the same medal around his neck for a while.
True.
So it's going to be tough. But in the NHL specifically, it's hoisting Lord Stanley and being the first guy to do it on your team, which Crosby has done three times. Because when you look at the other metrics on how we look at the top players in the game, they're pretty close. In fact, McDavid is 10 years, a decade younger, and already has one more scoring title, 3-2, and the same amount of Hart trophies, and counting, because he's going to be in that conversation once again this year. But we know it. When we talk about people going into the hall, the first thing we mention is how many times their name is on the cup. And right now, McDavid, the number is zero, something certainly he can change. But we also have seen, whether it was Chicago or Pittsburgh, the pathway to a cup is winning it early when those young stars are on a little bit of money. That's no longer the case for McDavid and Edmonton. So it's going to be increasingly more difficult throughout the years to put a team around them.
Yeah, I mean, your point about winning cups is very well taken. But it's very hard. it's really hard in the sport of hockey to win Stanley Cups. And that's not to say that Connor McDavid can't do it or won't do it. It's just really hard. So when you're measuring with cups as your barometer, maybe he wins, maybe he doesn't. That's kind of difficult to do. But when you're talking about individual accolades, you touched on it. Like, Connor's going to pass Sid's individual accomplishments, like, maybe even by the end of this year. And if it's not this year, it's going to be next year in terms of NHL accomplishments. So this guy, I mean, for me, is already, just based on his play in the last couple of regular seasons, is already up there in terms of one of the greatest hockey players we've ever seen. And it's just amazing that we have Crosby, who is 10 years McDavid senior, sort of transitioning into the limelight of his career. And here comes Connor McDavid to sort of take on the mantle of being the greatest hockey player that we've seen in a generation. So hockey is in a very good spot indeed with Connor McDavid at the helm. Okay, Kings forward Brendan Lemieux has been suspended for 5 games for biting Brady Tkachuk on Saturday. Not happy about this, DJ. It's Lemieux's third career suspension, and the league said his history was taken into account when making this decision. Is the 5-game suspension too little, too much, or just right? I believe you had it right around 5 games, maybe 7 yesterday.
So it's probably just right, even though if it was up to me, it would be longer, but I think everyone expected it to be around here. What surprised me was not even the number, it was the rationale. Like, you know, remember in math, you have to show your work? That the explanation to me was what I found super fascinating.
Yeah, we have video of it, so why don't we just play it? Because it's cringe, it's fascinating, there's many objectives, so why don't you form your own opinion?
While on the ice, Lemieux, feeling Tkachuk's hands on his face as they wrestle, bites Tkachuk on his bare left hand, and does so with a substantial amount of force. As the two are being separated, Tkachuk, while still on the ice, immediately informs the officials that Lemieux bit him as he examines his own hands, showing the officials that he is bleeding. Tkachuk regains his feet with cuts on both hands. Due to a lack of evidence, this decision does not include an analysis of how Tkachuk ended up bleeding from his right hand. We have heard Lemieux's argument that the puncture may have been caused in this moment by Tkachuk punching him on the tooth with force sufficient to cause a puncture wound. The video evidence does not support this version of events. This is not a hockey play. This is a player delivering a forceful, intentional, and potentially dangerous bite to the bare hand of another player with sufficient force to puncture the skin. Such actions will not be tolerated. To summarize, this is biting.
We're going to move on.
Yeah.
I don't have anything to add. Other than he punctured his skin when he was biting him. And they gave him 5 games. If they didn't even have video, and Brady Tkachuk was like, look, he bit me, and they had the bite marks. Okay, maybe you give him 5 games. They had the video and looked at it. They saw the bite, and they still only gave him 5 games. And they said they worked his history into the suspension. That's a joke of a suspension as far as I'm concerned.
I thought you said you were going to move on. It's like an instructional video in homeroom is what I just watched.
The Blue Jays made it official today, signing right-hander Kevin Gausman to a 5-year, $110 million contract. Gausman will earn $21 million in the next 2 seasons, then $22 million in 2024, and $23 million in 2025 and 2026. Must be nice. Gausman spoke to the Toronto media today for the first time and talked about why he decided to join the Jays.
If you look at the young pitchers that they have, Manoa and Pearson, and you know, just all those young pieces coming back, you know, learning and getting better. They just seem hungry. You know, they seem like a team that wants to win, and you know, likes. It seems like all the guys like those big moments. They don't shy away from them, and you know, part of that is probably their pedigree. You know, having that good DNA, and so. You know, for me, it just kind of made sense. You know, the closer it got to decision time, it was, all right, this is the team that I think I'm going to win, you know, the most with. And so, you know, I'm super excited to get to know all those guys.
So one great player comes into the fold and two, obviously, on their way out. Here are a couple familiar faces for the Jays fans wearing unfamiliar threads. Cy Young winner Robbie Ray and Gold Glover Marcus Semien were also introduced by the Mariners and Rangers this afternoon. Here is what they had to say during their media availability.
I felt like, you know, I was one tweak away, and I felt like I was always making a tweak or trying to change something up. And this past year, I feel like I found something that is just never going to change. And it feels right. It feels comfortable. It feels normal. And it's repeatable. I think that's the biggest thing, is I was always looking for something that I could repeat, and that felt natural to me. And, you know, I found it, and I hit the ground running with it.
This clubhouse and these resources, this is something that, you know, I got a taste of last year with Toronto. Coming from Oakland to Toronto, you get a taste of, you know, what other organizations do for players. To me, I envision a culture that, you know, where all young players and veterans can use these resources and get themselves better to win a championship.
Life comes at you fast, eh? Looks a little weird. So the start of free agency period has been fast and furious, but that will all stop tonight at midnight when the CBA expires and the lockout begins. So it could be a while before we see any other moves by the Toronto Blue Jays. TJ, how would you rate their offseason so far?
So far, so good, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Not done, but certainly you got a couple arms, which was important. You got arms for relatively cheap, given some of the numbers that we saw. So still some questions, but I think you have to be pretty bullish on the fact that there's a nice core here that you just need to tweak. I said it earlier in the week. This Blue Jays team won more games in the regular season than the team that won the World Series.
Yeah.
They're not far away.
No.
So I like the offseason thus far. What about you?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think they still have a couple holes to fill. And one of the options they were looking at to fill one of those holes was Chris Taylor re-signed with the Dodgers.
Yeah.
So he's off the table. We came in here yesterday. We were so pumped. Freddie Freeman, Jays are linked to him. Chris Bryant, Jays are linked to him. Chris Taylor. Well, at least one of those guys has, in fact, re-signed with their team. Chris Taylor back to the Dodgers. Okay. The WTA announced today that it is suspending all of its upcoming events in China due to the ongoing Peng Shuai situation. They were scheduled to host 10 tournaments in China and Hong Kong in 2022. WTA Chairman and CEO Steve Simon said in a statement that until the Chinese government verifiably proves that Peng is free and able to speak without interference or intimidation, and investigates her allegation of sexual assault in a full, fair, and transparent manner. They cannot put their players and staff at risk by holding events in the country. Are you surprised, Donovan, they're taking such a hard stance with this?
Yes and no, which I know makes no sense. But yes, in the sense that many other corporations, industries, governments haven't taken a hard stance with other similar instances. And we're talking about, listen, the most populous nation in the world, one of the fastest growing economies. So there's many business reasons with real ramifications why you don't. But the other big piece that, like, I don't think we really realize because it's out of sight, out of mind, and maybe not a sport that we're talking about every day on this side of the globe, is that an athlete in their career accused a government official of sexual assault, then was erased from the internet and went missing. Mm-hmm. Like, take any name of a North American athlete and say the exact same things. How would we all be reacting? So when you look at it through that context, no, I'm not surprised, because quite frankly, not doing business there is the least of things that you could do to get some answers into one, does she have freedom of movement and freedom of safety for her family? And two, what about the actual allegations that she made? Can we investigate those, please?
Yeah, I think those are all very, very good points. Can I tell you the one thing that sort of rubbed me the wrong way in this whole situation? It was when IOC president met on a video call with Peng Shuai and said that basically she looks like everything's fine. And that seemed to me, Donovan, like it was the most obvious case of trying to bring the temperature down before the Olympics in February, because there is a significant amount of human rights organizations that are calling for, at the very least, a diplomatic boycott of the Olympics in February. So for me, that was a little bit fishy, because you go on there and you say everything looks fine, but where is the rest of the story here? Why are we getting it through the conduit of the IOC? Where is she? We don't know any of these details yet. So a very impressive move, in my opinion, by the WTA, because let's face the facts, they are losing a lot of revenue here. Basically a third of all of their revenue comes from China, and they are losing that by pulling their events out of China. So definitely a significant step, and one that should be applauded in the sports world.
It's almost like, I don't know, we need an investigative journalist and someone known for covering the tennis beat unlike anyone else.
Yes.
Well, all right, well, John Wertheim on the Peng Shuai story later in the show, so stay with us. Justin Bourne in studio in hour two ahead of a great night of hockey coming up. Plus, Elliot Friedman stops by to discuss the latest around the NHL. Jeff Blair on the MLB lockout, which is just hours away. And up next, Shai Davidi in studio as we discuss the Kevin Guzman and Ross Atkins had to say today. Tim and friends, it's hump day.
It's about time. The Blue Jays been after this guy for a while.
Strong numbers across the board for the veteran righty.
Rumor has it.
Adele.
I'm going to have lots of rumors in the MLB world.
I mean, anyone who says he's not worth the money isn't paying attention.
You know, a little bit bitter afterwards. I mean, I felt like I deserved a little bit better after 10 years.
Why? It's not a question for me.
We'll give the fans and the TV audience what they want.
Number 97 versus number 87.
Expect there to be a lockout when the clock turns past midnight.
Until that pressure exists, it's really hard to see either side caving.
Kevin Gausman is one of those pitchers that has been known around baseball to have outstanding stuff.
He struck him out.
Nasty split finger fastballs. You can't throw better ones than that.
Kevin Gausman, outstanding, huh? Ooh.
Boy, what a stud right now, huh? He is on his game.
And he got him 7 in a row for Kevin Gausman.
He has just simply been one of the most dominant pitchers in all of baseball. That's a hammer.
Oh, my goodness.
Standing ovation for Kevin Gausman.
He is pitching like an all-star.
You've got to tip your cap to Kevin Gausman.
Man, has he been dominant.
Gausman's one of those guys that he's finally coming into his own, and he's going to be good for a long time.
So the Jays made it official today as they introduced Kevin Gausman and his five-year $100 million deal. Joining me now to discuss it and more, Shai Davidi. Shai, thanks for coming in.
Pleasure as always.
So the phone is on the desk. please make sure the push alerts are on. Even turn the volume on. If you have to take a call, take it. It's that time of year.
Yeah, I mean, for a few more hours, right? and then the phone is going silent for an extended period after that.
Hopefully not an extended period. But let's start with the deal they got done before that silence. And what does this deal specifically, if anything, signal to you about the intentions of the club?
Well, it's quite obvious that they were determined to get an elite starter. And, you know, my sense is the Blue Jays pursued Robbie Ray pretty hard and they wanted to bring him back. But that Kevin Gausman was sort of their 1A. You know, if they could get Kevin Gausman and not Robbie Ray, I think they're fine with that. And you look at their profiles, they're two sort of similar guys, right? They ended up getting a relatively similar contract. A little bit more money for Robbie Ray. He gets an opt-out. There's some value to that. The Blue Jays get a comp pick as well for Ray signing elsewhere. There's some value to that. So they're not so equal. They're not as equal as the numbers maybe make it look, but relatively similar. But, you know, two guys who rely on basically two pitches, you know, they're secondary pitches that are absolutely elite for both guys. Robbie Ray with his slider, just we saw how filthy that was this past year. Blue Jay fans next season are going to see just how disgusting Kevin Gausman's splitter is. I mean, it's mesmerizing. You can see guys corkscrewing themselves into the ground, swinging at it. So it's going to be a lot of fun, I think, for Blue Jay fans to watch this. And, you know, you look at some of the projections going forward over the course of the 5 years, you know, that both guys are expected to produce relatively at similar levels for the duration of their contracts. So, you know, I think for the Blue Jays, you can always look at sort of how they're behaving and kind of gauge a plan. The Blue Jays wanted to get an elite top of the rotation starter. You know, they got one of those. You know, they lose Robbie Ray, but they got Kevin Gausman. They're still, I think, looking for, you know, a potential five, and still looking for an infielder or some relief help. Those are the conclusions we can draw based on their actions to this point.
So what would be the priority if you've got a little bit of a shopping list? You know, what's the cue in terms of what they need to address right now?
You know, the Blue Jays are really interesting in that they don't fully look at it in terms of position, but they would look at it in terms of what's the maximum impact. So if you could get, like, an amazing another extra starter and you can only get sort of a, you know, middling infielder type, then obviously you'd go that route, even though you'd probably on paper prefer them to get another infielder. So, you know, I think the search is going to be for another for basically impact, but I think they're going to have to get an infielder. And, you know, my sense is that the Blue Jays still think that they can do more and they can accomplish more. So, you know, there's obviously going to be this pause that's looming, but I don't think the Blue Jays are done by any means. I think we're still going to see some pretty interesting things happen for this team.
So 6.5 hours-ish before that looming lockout, which is coming because, you know, conversations aren't happening.
Yes.
What is the likelihood that we see a bit of a buzzer beater from this front office? And just so people understand, what actually has to happen to get a deal through at this time, from obviously agreeing to terms, but physicals and getting things good at the league office?
Yeah, essentially the main impediment towards a deal happening between now and, you know, the 11:59 p.m. deadline is that, can you get a physical done in time, right? So if the Blue Jays were trying to finalize something with somebody who's across the country, well, you're not getting him to their complex in Florida in time to do a physical. But, you know, I'd heard there was a possibility that they may be able to sneak one in today, that there was, you know, a possibility of one more deal. I don't know if that's going to get done or not. But, you know, I think there's still an opportunity for them to maybe get something done with someone who lives in the Florida area. I mean, he basically would have to drive over to the complex in time and get all the X's and O's done. But, you know, if not, the Blue Jays will have some time. The other sides are going to have some time to figure things out. And, you know, if you get something to 90% at this point, well, you know, you're almost there by the time things resume.
Come on, Ross, look, it's just like putting in an offer for a house with no home inspection, no conditions. Let's go.
I think that's a bad idea for anybody.
Yes, it is. But sadly, in this market, sometimes it's the only way.
A necessity, but you know, the way the free agent market has gone, I think the Blue Jays can certainly look back in their history about deals without physicals. Mike Sirotka will resonate for some people in that regard. So, you know, definitely make sure that the physical is right before you're buying.
Okay, so let's talk about the difference in buying before and after a deal, because we have seen a flurry, certainly. But what changes or could change, both pro and con for player and I suppose club, once a deal is struck? How could the market look different?
I mean, that's a really intriguing question. I think the primary thing you're wondering about, both for teams and if you're a free agent, is what is the competitive balance tax or luxury tax threshold going to look like afterwards? Right now, it's $210 million, and teams that are in and up against it, you know, that's served in large measure as almost a de facto salary cap. So, you know, does that, if it goes up by a reasonable amount, you know, does that change the behavior of, say, the New York Yankees? And maybe all of a sudden they're jumping into a Carlos Correa market. You know, I think for at that level, there is a significant impact. I think for the Blue Jays, there's, at least as it relates to this market, not going to be much impact. You know, the players that they're pursuing and they're interested in will probably continue to be the players they're interested in pursuing in. The bigger question for them is, are there going to be some changes to the arbitration process? Are there going to be some changes to the reserve system in terms of how long it takes players to reach and qualify for free agency, things of that nature? That will impact how they manage the rest of the roster that's under contractual control for years to come. You know, I think that's where the primary question mark is for them. You know, by and large, the business of this offseason, the way that plays out, is pretty much dictated by the terms that are already out there.
So knowing what you know about the front office and their methodology and process around these things.
Keyword there.
Yes, 100%. Some of the things that have been talked about in terms of changes, whether it's, you know, a lottery in the draft situation, draft pick compensation changing or going away, and service time changing. What, if any, of those things would change the way they approach building a roster?
Well, I think if you're looking at them right now, the obvious question that's going to be facing this team in the mid to longer term is, you know, do you try to lock up Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette? And right now, the Blue Jays have both players for at least four more years, right? But if there is some sort of change to the way service time is calculated and the pathway to free agency, maybe that switches. You know, one of the proposals that owners made to players, and it's a total non-starter, it was, you know, creating an arbitrary age for free agency of 29 and a half. You know, that would give the Blue Jays an extra 3 years with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Now, you know, the players aren't going to accept that, but some sort of change along those lines could impact the period of control they have, and then would impact the motivation or potential timing or necessity for an extension for those two guys. And look, you know, in both cases, it's going to be a very substantial commitment if they're going to get that done. And, you know, the longer the Blue Jays wait, you know, if those guys keep performing, it's only going to get more expensive, which is something, you know, the Washington Nationals, for instance, are discovering with Juan Soto right now.
One of the themes of this offseason thus far is the wild disparity in spending from club to club. And it's not, to your point, some of those big clubs and big markets necessarily. It's a bunch of clubs that didn't make the postseason last year. What do you think coming out of this will change, if anything, in terms of that disparity in the sport?
Well, if the players get their way, you know, teams like the Baltimore Orioles aren't going to go through these, you know, never-ending tankings. And, you know, I mean, the Baltimore Orioles, like, let's be honest, that's an abomination on the sport, right? I mean, they're completely punting on major league talent. They're just trying to create a critical mass of young players and completely sitting out in any meaningful way the free agent process. You know, I think that's not good for your sport. You to have an 110-loss team that is just really hard to watch. You know, it's bad enough if you're an Orioles fan, but I mean, it sucks if they're coming to your city too. Like, do you want to watch these guys? You know, I think that is a fundamental issue where you know, the collective bargaining agreement has inadvertently or perhaps advertently, depending on, you know, where you sit, incentivized losing. Because if you're not going to make the playoffs, you're better off finishing 30th than you are finishing 12th or 13th or 14th, right? So, you know, that is an issue. And teams are smart. They take advantage of the agreement the way that it is written. It certainly is absolutely smarter to finish toward 30th or 29th or 28th as opposed to 13th, 14th, 15th, because you're going to get so much more opportunity to improve yourself in the draft. And that's something that perhaps has skewed too far in that direction. And if there can be a meaningful adjustment there, then I think you're going to get a more balanced league, ideally. And you're going to get players who are a bit more happy and perhaps recreate some of the middle class in baseball that's been lost in recent years.
Well, what I appreciate is that you punted on answering the many messages on your cell phone during this. You have much better smartphone discipline in conversation than I do, so thank you for that. And enjoy some downtime over the next couple months, because nothing will be going on.
Yeah, we'll just we'll wait it out. You know, I think that if you're going to have a lockout, if you're going to have a labor dispute in the middle of the off season, where, you know, not all that much happens anyways, this is probably the best time. You know, if this isn't done by, say, March 1st, you know, then I think at that point it's worth stressing over for the time being. Hey, take the break, enjoy it, and come back when baseball reconvenes.
Well said. Well, we'll take the break. After that break, the WTA has made a statement to China in support of Peng Shuai. They've suspended all tournaments in China, which adds up to 10 events in 2022. We'll discuss the move with Sports Illustrated's John Wertheim next. Welcome back. And safe to say the safety and well-being of Chinese tennis player Peng Shuai continues to be an ongoing concern. There have been some claims by the IOC and China that she is safe and well, but the proof is very much up for debate. And today, the WTA suspended all of their events in China and Hong Kong for 2022, a very significant statement. Here to discuss is John Wertheim from Sports Illustrated and 60 Minutes. John, I wish I was talking to you about the Beatles and why they broke up, because that was a great piece. Please, everyone, go see it online. But I'm not. I'm talking about this story, which, one, I don't know if we really appreciate how big it is. How big a move today was what Steve Simon and the WTA did?
Yeah, I think if you compare this to not just other sports leagues like the NBA, but other businesses that have had these problematic instances in China, they have not had the reaction of women's tennis. And this is, you know, I like it. It's almost like a tennis match where you sort of have one side making a statement and the other countering. And today, this statement by Steve Simon, I mean, here you see the WTA women's tennis. They have more events in China than in any other country. I mean, this is a significant chunk of business they are putting at risk here. But Steve Simon has said time and again, principles over profit. And this is really a very significant move. I mean, you know, the context here, too, is we've got Winter Olympics coming up in barely 50 days from now. We have China in sort of the crosshairs of human rights abuses. We just had Xi Jinping essentially give himself no term limits. So for a sports league to come out and say this and basically say, we're not okay with this. Your values are not consistent with our values. And unless we see some changes, we're out. This is a statement that a lot bigger entities have not made.
So will there be a ripple effect, whether it's the other tours or other sports leagues or governments, right? Biden is often asked about, you know, a diplomatic boycott of those upcoming Olympics. Do you see this having an impact for others?
You know, I mean, that's one aspect of this that's really so interesting, that Steve Simon, who the video just showed, I mean, he would not be doing this if Serena Williams and Naomi Osaka and the players, if they were not fully behind this. And, you know, what happened, what just sort of for context, this is Peng Shuai, and she had this Me Too allegation. This was not like her Twitter was hacked. I mean, this was a long emotional account with names and dates. And immediately after she posted it, it disappeared. References to her were scrubbed from the internet. She had disappeared. I mean, we talked about her. She's resurfaced in videos, but I think there's a lot of question about whether she's doing this under duress. And for a business basically to say, we are not only are we disturbed by this, but so much so we're not comfortable doing business in your country. a country where there are 1.4 billion people, a country where 30% of our revenues come from in the case of women's tennis. This is really quite a statement. And what you can see happening is people now pointing to women's tennis and saying, look, if women's tennis can put principle over profit, we should be able to as well. I don't know if you remember, Donovan, that when the NBA had this issue 2 years ago, and Daryl Morey with the Houston Rockets had a tweet in support of Hong Kong and Taiwan and democracy, and China was very offended, and players like LeBron James rushed to China's defense, and the NBA sort of had this wishy-washy, let's agree to disagree response. If that unfolded today, after the precedent that women's tennis has just set, I suspect this would be treated very, very differently. This is really a significant move, and it's going to be really interesting to see how this keeps unfolding.
Well, the IOC has claimed that quiet diplomacy is the best way to find a resolution. What does that look like? Is that possible? Because what the WTA has asked for is to, one, see her, which we kind of have, but we don't know necessarily that she has freedom of movement or speech, or we don't know about the actual claims and them being investigated. Another thing the WTA wants. So how likely are any of those things to happen given the course that they've gone?
Yeah, I do not think the IOC has covered themselves in glory. And I think what quiet diplomacy looks like is an Olympics about 60 days away. I don't know what it would look like in a different time of year. But think about this. We have an Olympic athlete here. I mean, this is a player who's medaled at the Olympics in Peng Shui. And she's had this very long and emotional and detailed Me Too allegation against this high-ranking member of the Chinese Communist Party. References to her on the internet are scrubbed. References to this allegation you can't find on a Chinese search engine. You've had this repudiated by Chinese news services. And the IOC is okay with this? It's a very strange set of circumstances, and it's a bit disappointing to sort of see what is clearly a statement not in her voice. I mean, Peng Shui in tennis circles was known for years and years as someone who confronted authority, as someone who did not want the Chinese Federation telling her who would coach her. She was this outspoken critic who challenged this Chinese authority. The notion that she would just walk back this allegation and say everything's cool here, nothing to see, let these games go on. It is, at a minimum, wildly out of character with what we know about this athlete. And I think for the IOC to essentially say, look, we saw her on a Zoom call, she's cool, I think that is pretty disingenuous.
So we have the WTA championships that will no longer be there, which was going to have the highest prize purse ever. And you mentioned those 10 events now going to be elsewhere. One of the reasons China has invested so much is because they see some growth in the sport. What do the financial ramifications look like? Is this an opportunity for them to pivot their business away from China? Or are they going to have to take a haircut on what they would have made in the coming years?
Yeah, I think both. I mean, I think that the good thing about these international tours is they are built to pivot, right? So you can move an event from one market to another. We already saw this event that was supposed to be held in Shenzhen. It was a kind of COVID and not politics, but it moved to Guadalajara. It wasn't the same amount of prize money, but it was very successful. I think what's going to be interesting is to see whether the market rewards the WTA for this courageous stance. And if there isn't some value in this sort of righteous stance that women's tennis has taken. These events will move. There'll be other promoters. They could be in Europe. They could be in the U.S. They could be in Canada. Canadian tennis has some very popular ascending players. Maybe they stick a tournament in Vancouver or, in Quebec City. It's going to be interesting to see whether the global market, though, rewards women's tennis for taking this stand. And I think that's where the WTA can make back some of this lost revenue.
And lastly, I mean, this has obviously been somewhat fluid, but what do you think is the next domino to drop? What do you see happening next in terms of finding an outcome here?
Yeah, I mean, the WTA wants this clear investigation, a full and fair investigation. That is not on brand for China. I don't think we're going to have a Me Too investigation coming in. I think the real next domino is who's going to follow suit. There is a men's tennis tour that doesn't have quite the amount of exposure in China that women's tennis does, but is the ATP, the men's tour, prepared to say, you know what, we're not comfortable about this? One of our players, we feel like, was under duress and was censored and not treated well. We're not going to abide by this. I think the NBA has some explaining to do, and I also think it's going to be interesting to see how much will this echo at the Olympics. Is in the U.S., is NBC going to be talking about this? Is Peng Shui going to be a storyline? I mean, this has been a real crisis for China. In 50, 60 days from now, when the Olympics kick off, is this going to be a storyline? It's going to be really interesting to see how this continues to unfold.
Well, if it is, you'll be covering it, and I'll be bothering you to explain it to me once again. Thank you so much for your time, John.
You got it. Thanks, Alan.
All right, time for a break. When we come back, Justin Bourne will join me in studio, and we'll be joined by Elliot Friedman. So much to discuss right now in the NHL, and we'll hit the rinks in Toronto and Edmonton ahead of a great night of hockey as Tim and Friends rolls up. Stay with us.
Time for Real Sports Talk with Tim McAuliffe and Friends of the Show.
Thank you, Sheepdogs. Lots of Friends of the Show today. I'm Donovan Bennett in for the vacationing Tim McAuliffe. Another full hour coming up for you out of Scotiabank Wednesday night hockey and a great night of hockey action. We'll head to the rinks and check in with Sean McKenzie and Gene Principe shortly and be joined by Elliot Friedman. And with such a great night of hockey, we've asked the one, the only, Justin Bourne, to jump in for a couple of segments. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
I was going to say, you know, the Bourne identity, but I'm sure you've heard that like once or twice before.
You know, it's honestly, it's helped. It has helped people learn how to spell my name. Jason thing is not so cool. The right. Bourne thing has been helpful.
Okay. Yeah. I love seeing you and not just hearing you with Kipper. Love the show. Also love the look. I love the chords, the monochromatic. I'm jealous of the look, quite frankly. How is the show with Kipper going? And where did you get the threads? Because
well,
I'm very jealous.
You know, this is actually new. And I appreciate, I've noticed you also generally have very good style today included, like the coat. You know what I did is I got this about 2 weeks ago with a hoodie underneath that I wore for an Edmonton Oilers broadcast. Let me tell you, in Alberta, they did not like the hoodie. It was not a popular look at all. So I have dialed back the hoodless look. This is a medium effort dress level.
I mean, fashion trends move slowly. Eventually, it will get out west. Speaking of fashionable, we got to bring in Sean to the conversation,
nice segue.
Right? All right, the Leafs hosting the Avs tonight, Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. Nathan MacKinnon returns for the Avs after missing 8 games. The Avs went 7-1 on that stretch. And of course, it's a return to Toronto once again for Nazem Kadri. He has an impressive 27 points in 18 games this season, while the Leafs have won 14 of 16 and led the Atlantic Division. With more on tonight's game, let's send it to the clean-shaven and well-dressed Sean McKenzie live at Scotiabank Arena. What's up, Sean?
Well, Donovan, first I have to say Austin Matthews. We have to start there. Much like myself, the mustache is gone. Now, okay. Austin Matthews is a 24-year-old NHL superstar who makes more than $11 million a year, but a lot of us have something in common with him today for the first time in a very long time. We all showed up to work without our mustaches. Of course, that was all the talk at the Morning State. The mustache is gone. My job, though, is to talk to you, gentlemen. Austin Matthews' job tonight is to go up against the Colorado Avalanche, Nathan MacKinnon, and as you guys mentioned, Nazem Kadri, who returns to this building. It's not his first return to Toronto, but it's always entertaining when Naz is back. He loves talking to the media. He doesn't shy away from it. He spoke at length this morning, and he talked a little bit about his departure from the Maple Leafs.
Ended up being a little bit bittersweet. You know, I was put in a great situation with, you know, coming to the Avalanche and being around a great group of guys. So, of course, I was upset. You know, that's where I wanted to be at the time. But, you know, sometimes, you know, it can be a blessing in disguise.
Why do you think it did end?
Why? That's not a question for me.
As you can see, Nas always entertaining. And there was lots of talk. A lot of his Maple Leafs teammates talked about just how great he was in the room, how much they miss him. But the funniest moment might have come when Nathan MacKinnon was asked kind of what stands out the most about Kadri. And he said, well, he's a great chirper. He's always entertaining on the ice. Of course, someone followed up and said, is there a chirp that you remember the most? And MacKinnon thought about it for a second. You could tell he didn't want to share all of them, guys, but he did say a few. He said there was one where he looked at a guy and said, you're only good for doing my laundry, something along those lines. And the other one was that I will fight you if you play play more than 8 minutes tonight, and Nas doesn't have any fights this season, so I assume that player did not go on to play more than 8 minutes. Always entertaining to have Nas back in town.
That is a fantastic chirp. I'm excited to see if, you know, who in the Toronto Maple Leafs is on the wrong end of some of that from Kadri tonight. Wanted to get you your thoughts on, you know, the importance of tonight's game for the Leafs. They're on a bit of a roll, you know, 16-6 record. You don't want to say a game is important, but they haven't really had a measuring stick game in a little while. So how important is it tonight that they come out against a very good Avalanche team and put up a good showing?
I think it's really intriguing because everything in a lot of ways is stacked against them. Despite you look at the standings and the Leafs are here, the Avs are much further down, but you know, throw all that out the window. This is a Leafs team that, despite being red hot, is coming off a long California trip. They had tons of success. They haven't really had any days off. They flew home yesterday and just settled in and had a practice, and 2 days ago, and then practiced the next day. So they haven't really had a lot of rest coming from the West Coast. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle this Avalanche team that really right now is rolling. And they're a deep team. They have Nathan McKinnon, they have Nazem Kadri, they have Cale Makar on the back end. So this is an Avalanche team that creates offense in a lot of different ways. And what I found really interesting this morning is, you guys know, you're in the media, you've heard so many teams come in and praise the Leafs for their high-flying offense, for Austin Matthews, for Mitch Marner and William Nylander. Jared Bednar was asked, what do you see from the Leafs on tape? And he didn't actually really mention their offense at all. He just talked about how good they are on their own end, how well they handle the puck, how responsible they are in their own end. And that's not something you hear very often from the Maple Leafs. And when you talk to Sheldon Keefe, it was all about controlling the Avalanche offense and how high-flying and dynamic they are. So it feels like a weird role reversal here, where one team is talking about offense and one team's talking about defense, and it's different than what we've seen in years past. But I think it'll be really, really interesting to see how this new stingy Leafs D, at least this season as of late, handles that high-flying Avalanche offense.
That's all good info, but Sean, I don't want to talk to you anymore because your fit is also better than mine. Wide peak lapel, blue on blue, bigger traps than me. So thanks, Sean. But we're going to go to Gene Principe now. Okay, also a star-studded affair in Edmonton tonight as Connor McDavid and the Oilers host Sidney Crosby and the Penguins. You can see it across Sportsnet, Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet 360 at 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain. Yesterday, we played you Gene Principe's interview with Connor McDavid ahead of the matchup, and Gene joins us live now from Rogers Place. Gene, it's always special when these two meet, isn't it?
Yeah. Donovan and Justin, it is. Now, I haven't worked out in a while, and I know it shows, but are these traps? Are these your traps?
No one does. Yes.
Neutral zone traps.
I remember no neutral zone traps tonight, Donovan and Justin. Who would want? They should outlaw that when you've got players like Edmonton and Pittsburgh have, and specifically Connor McDavid and Sidney Crosby. And Donovan, you mentioned that sit down with Connor. Obviously, with the pandemic, we haven't had much of an opportunity to sit and talk with players on a one-on-one basis, but it really was a joy to talk to him. And you could see kind of his eyes light up, not just talking about Sidney, but the fact that he's discussed in the same conversation. You know, two guys who left home at 15 to further their careers. One went first overall. The other one said, geez, I'd like to go first overall. And they did 10 years apart. Now, this is where things start to change. Not in points, because after 427 games, Connor has 610 points, Sidney 597. So they are very close. But then you get to the team goals, right? Sidney has won Art Ross and Hart, and Connor's done that. But then it's the gold medals and the Stanley Cups. And that's what Connor wants and I think needs in order for him to feel like, hey, I've done what Sidney Crosby has done. Back, not in this building, but in this city and in these two cities, we used to see those two guys, Wayne and Mario, go at it. And I've heard many stories about how Wayne would be playing the late game on hockey night in Canada. Mario would have played the early game and he would have seen Mario have, let's say, a 3 or 4 point night. And then suddenly Wayne would be like, listen, these guys are thoroughbreds. They don't need extra motivation. But when you see someone like Mario in Wayne's case or like Sidney and Connor's case, it does amp you up a little bit. So you can see both of these guys have an utmost amount of respect for each other. And you also can tell that they're starting to think about February and the Olympics. Fingers crossed, everything goes well, that they you know, will be on the same team and potentially at times be on the same line. And so a lot going on and a lot to be excited about coming into tonight's game at Rogers Place.
Gene, another thing those two guys have in common is they both have pretty good quote-unquote second fiddle guys. I'd like to focus a little bit on Leon Draisaitl. It's offensive to even use that phrase when you talk about him. Tell us a little bit about the evolution of Leon Draisaitl as a player. Just watching him now, there's a confidence and a... I'm like intimidated watching that guy in the media. Tell us about the evolution of Draisaitl and the player he's become.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes, Justin, you'll ask him a question, he'll give you that kind of German strong stance, yeah. And you're thinking, what's he thinking? But, you know, he's turned into a wonderful player. And, I mean, I'm glad you asked about him because it would seem disrespectful on a night like this, yes, with Sidney and Connor in the building, not to talk about, you know, the number one scorer in the NHL, the player of the month, who last month in 13 games had 9 games with 2 or more points. The Oilers went 9-4. Leon had 27 points. Listen, all kinds of great stats. And I think on a night like this, he understands why the stage is set for these two young men, Sidney and Connor. And let's throw in the fact that, you know, they're Canadian born and raised, even though Sidney plays in Pittsburgh. And so there's that extra sort of element and attraction to them. But it, you know, Leon's from Germany, but came over here as a teenager, and I have a lot of respect for a guy like him who learned the language back home, continued to add to that here, played for a while, 7 games in the minors, hard to believe now when you consider that, was sent back to junior, and he's come up since then and been nothing but unbelievable, a 50-goal scorer, you know, potentially on pace to go 50 and 50 or less, so it's incredible to me, and you know, people say, wow, what a job, you get to cover the Edmonton Oilers. Covering the NHL is, you know, a gift, and I think we all agree on that. But to see Connor and Leon every 2 nights, 12, 13, 15 times a month over the course of 6-7 months, and hopefully for them into the playoffs, it is wonderful. It's exciting, and I think that's why everyone is so pumped up about tonight. Unfortunately, Evgeny Malkin, just quick injury update, he is skating with the team, he is progressing. Listen, Pittsburgh, Donovan and Justin won their Stanley Cups through the middle. We know that, thanks to Malkin, thanks to Crosby, and maybe to a lesser extent, Stahl. I'm not Eric, not Mark. The other one. There's Jordan. Another Stahl. What's it? Justin? No. Jordan. I knew it started with a J. So I think that the Oilers feel like they can be the same kind of team, even though Leon and Connor sometimes end up on the same line. I was thinking Justin Bourne. I can't get that guy off my mind.
Neither can I. But you're a gift, though, Gene, because I had a bunch of questions for Elliot, and you answered a lot of them for me. So you're doing my work for me. Appreciate it. Speaking of Elliot, Elliot Friedman joins us now for 3 of 32. 3 of 32 is brought to you by the first ever GMC AT4 lineup. Now, Friedge, thank you for doing this, and thank you for waiting. And I think when I think of waiting, that second week of January, January 10th, is the date that I'm kind of waiting for to see, are NHL players really going to go, given everything I'm reading in the news? If Gary Bettman is looking at this and talking to the owners with a lot of pull in that room, what needs to happen, or I suppose not happen, between now and then for the protocols that they've continued to put in place to work and for them to give the players a green light to go?
Well, first of all, Donovan, all hail the Purple Satan going for the Vanier Cup this weekend against Saskatchewan.
Yes,
you have
sir.
To do that. You know, I think they're going to take this right down to the wire, Donovan. I really do. They don't have to make a decision until January 10th. They could go later than January 10th, but then they have to pay a financial penalty for doing so. So I think they're going to take it right to it. Look, with every day, we're seeing more. We saw the figure skating championships in China. I think the national ones were postponed or canceled this week. Look, if you have any sense of reading the news around the world, you see what's going on. One of the biggest concerns is what happens if you test positive at the Olympics in Beijing. You know, you could be facing potentially a 3-week quarantine, although that's not 100% set in stone yet. Obviously, the teams aren't thrilled about that. The players individually, like, I've had players still tell me, I want to go, I want to take the chance at it might be my only opportunity to be an Olympian, but there's a lot of negatives piling up with each every day. But I do think what they're going to do, Donovan, is they're going to take it as close to the decision date as they can, unless they get a ton more cancellations and it just becomes obvious and they have to do it sooner. But I do think the goal is to wait as close to January 10th as they possibly can to see if there's a way it gets any better.
Elliot, so what happens if they do cancel it? I mean, that's a pretty big gap in the NHL schedule. What would become of the NHL season were it to come to what we all fear is a worst-case scenario?
Well, first of all, we have five games to make up right now, so you can reschedule those. That's number one. Number two, the schedule's been pretty tight this year because of the Olympics. You can give people a bit of a break, and I would expect there would be some of that. You know, I heard a wild rumor about like a 3-on-3 World Cup / Olympic tournament, but that was denied to me. So I don't know that that's necessarily on the radar. But I do think what you can do is make up games and give people a bit of a break because, you know, for example, Philadelphia next week, they've got five games in 7 days, and it's a back-to-back at home with Colorado and Tampa, a day off at New Jersey, a day off at Vegas and Arizona. Like, that's a killer schedule, and it's because of the Olympic Games and building availability, so you can give people a little bit of a break to see what you can do.
You mentioned Tampa. There's interest in, you know, members of their front office in terms of the open executive job in Montreal and the jobs that are open elsewhere and might be open elsewhere as we monitor what happens in Vancouver. When you look at the list of candidates for the job in Montreal, what sticks out to you?
Well, I think what they're going to want, Donovan, is I think they're going to want somebody who, you know, like Jeff Gorton, I believe, is a 5-year deal, and he's going to meet with the media later this week. I saw Eric report it's likely to be Friday. I think what there's, I didn't realize there were actually odds. You know what?
French lottery.
You know what? I got to say, people like to gamble. I guess I shouldn't be surprised. You know, I think what they're going to look for is someone who maybe becomes not only the general manager now, but eventually becomes potentially the number one person later. You know, Jeff Gorton, who you're showing on camera right now, he doesn't like a lot of attention. You know, Glenn Sather likes attention. Anytime you wear a hat like that and a cigar, the camera's going to find you. But, you know, Jeff Gorton doesn't like a lot of attention. He's very comfortable to be in the background, to do the work. And, for example, in New York, John Davidson did a lot of the media. So what's going to happen here is he's going to be in the background. He's going to do a lot of the work. He's going to run the organization. And I think the other person's going to be the face to talk in French and English about the team and eventually grow into the number one job. And that's why I think when you take a look at the two people at the lowest odds, you've got Daniel Briere and Matthew Darsh on your list. They are guys who are relatively newer into the business, who, you know, would go in there. I think they would be popular choices, and I think eventually they could grow into the number one person in the organization. You know, Briere in particular, I know his name came up before Gorton was hired internally. He was a name they were considering. That doesn't mean he's a shoe-in. I think it just means they're going to take a long look at him. Same goes for Darsh. Same goes for a Martin Madden from Anaheim. Same goes for Roberto Luongo, though I don't necessarily think the time is right for him. You know, Brodeur is a really interesting name that you put on there. I think he enjoys being more on the business job than more the day-to-day hockey job, but I could see why you put it. And the total wild card is Waugh. You know, he's been very public about the fact he wants to do it. I think the biggest question would be, you know, would he want to be in a situation where he's not calling the shots? And can he work in that structure? I would have no problem talking to Patrick Waugh. I think you should always look to put smart people in your organization, and Waugh certainly knows the game and is passionate about it. I just think the biggest question about him was, if he's not making the ultimate decision, could he handle that?
Oh, give me Patrick Waugh. Give me fireworks. We're in the media. We should all be rooting for Patty Waugh. That would be great. Speaking of goaltenders, speaking of the Canadians, I can't help but wonder if whoever does take the team over talks to a GM and they say, hey, look at our cap sheet. Our owner's okay with the rebuild, and Carey Price makes a lot of money. He's not going to help you rebuild your team. It's a tough situation for a guy who's been through a hard time here and everyone loves, but it doesn't really line up. Would there be a possibility of talking to Carey Price about something happening there?
I do think it almost happened last summer, Justin. So it's not out of the realm of possibility. Carey Price was left unprotected, and you know, Seattle considered it. At the end of the day, they didn't feel they had enough clarity on his health, because he was we're not talking about the mental health challenges he's faced, but his physical health. He was injured at the end of last year, and that's why I think Seattle passed on him. But that says to me that the idea of Carey Price not being a Montreal Canadian, it's not so far-fetched. Now, do I think that that's going to, you know, he controls the situation. Ultimately, how he feels is going to be a big part of that. But I absolutely could see a situation where they have a conversation at some point and say, you know, how do you feel? Where would you like to go? We can test those situations and let's see what's out there. Yes, you know, like honestly, after a year like this one, I think there'll probably be a lot of conversations with a lot of people about, okay, who's available? Who do other teams want? How do those players feel about that, particularly if they have some team control? And let's see where we go. Like, don't forget, Jeff Gorton did something very similar in New York. They said, we're going in a new direction. Now, it turned around faster than they thought, but he went through it, and so he knows what it's like.
Okay, before we let you go, because you're wearing the Bay Street Power suit, you know that lawyers and high-level administrators are all about precedent, and lots of eyes on Department of Player Safety this week with two different rulings. What stood out to you about what we saw, given, you know, they could in some ways set precedent?
Well, so the one you're showing right now, as far as I know, this is the longest biting suspension in the history of the league. The one I found previously that was longest was Dave Manson in 1990. That was three games. If you watch the video, Donovan, you just showed Tkachuk's right hand. They said they could not prove what happened to the right hand, but they found something on the left hand. It sounds to me like that hearing was quite a battle. And what the Kings and Brendan Lemieux, who's represented by his father, Claude, argued, from what I understand, was prove it. Prove that he bit him, and you have to be able to say with 100% certainty that there was a bite here. And if you watch the video, it's clear they couldn't prove it on the right hand, but they could prove it on the left hand. And I think especially now, in these days of increased hygiene, they don't want that. They don't want that at all. I thought the most interesting thing was, by stopping the penalty at five games, that meant there could be no appeal to an independent arbitrator. It has to be six or more, so the commissioner would appeal this one. But it's also a warning, if anybody does this again in the future, you're going to be penalized stiffly, because this is the biggest biting suspension in the history of the league.
It's also hilarious. What did you make of the defense that Lemieux was like, yeah, he punched me in the tooth, which I loved. I got to be honest, Friege, I think this is not a serious matter, but a comical one. I know the league does probably not view it that way, but what did you make of that defense? Because to me, it seems disingenuous, does it not?
Well, it's worked before. Like, if you go in the situations, Justin, where there have been bites, there have been players who've argued, you know what, he had his hand in my mouth, what do you want me to do? So it didn't work in this case, but it has worked before.
Mm-hmm. So much to get into.
By the way, Justin, I was listening to you at the beginning of the conversation.
Yeah.
Don't listen to what people say about your clothes. If you like your clothes, wear your clothes. Toughen up, man. You're in the big leagues now.
You know, fair enough. The Twitter feed, man, it's thick. It's a thick space to wade through.
You cannot worry about what people say about that. You know, like, we're all going to get hate. We're all going to get love. Do what you like. Don't worry about that.
Thanks, Friege.
No worries.
Build me up, buddy.
This is coming from the king of the curl neck, coming from someone whose facial hair trends often. But you could have stopped it at don't listen to what people say. You didn't have to say about the clothes. You just stopped it there.
There's only one person that matters, Donovan. And we're all married to them. That's the vote that matters the most.
Well said. Man. Well said. Good final word. Thank you, Elliot.
Take care,
as
guys.
Always, sage advice from Elliot Freeman. We'll talk some more hockey after the break. As the Leafs try and keep things rolling, but the fan base, are they buying a playoffs again? We'll discuss. Should we care about what the fans say? Not so sure. Here we go. Welcome back to Tim and Friends. We're just friends, no Tim. But this friend over here, Bourne, has a lot more to say that you care about than, quite frankly, I do. So let's get right to it. We talked previously about the Lemieux suspension. We didn't get a chance to talk about the slew foot by Brad Marchand, who is trying to tell us that he's a changed man.
Yeah.
He's turned over a new leaf, which might be true, but a slew foot is a slew foot. What did you think, one, of the play, and then two, of the discipline?
Well, you know, Brad Marchand kind of is what he is. What's so unfortunate about this guy is he is so good at hockey, and we have to talk about this stuff. It's seemingly, I know it's been a while since he's had an actual suspension, but it's constantly on the verge of breaking through with him. And so you get to a point where you just feel like it's in his nature. It is who he is, and he can't change that. And so it's a side effect. You know, I thought Ken Reed on this very show made a pretty good point about it, is that I think he's paid Marchand now $1 million, roughly $1 million in suspension money. But how much has he made because hockey values people who play on the edge? So his team's going to give him a little bit more money because he is a guy, you know, not because he does that, but because he does 10 things like it that don't get called. So it's almost like it's worth it to him. Yeah, he's going to get suspended now and then. Unfortunately, for the way hockey is, I think that hockey teams value a little element of that in guys' games.
Well, I mean, in hockey, it was valued. If you're a vocal coach, if you get after the officials, maybe get some calls on your side, although evidently maybe not, because the deterrent is if you're Rod Brind'Amour, you get fined. Did this surprise you?
Yes, this one blows my mind. I'm generally the last guy that really likes the Department of Player Safety. I think they do a good job. This one I don't get. Here's what Brind'Amour does to get a $25,000 fine. He gets very upset. You know, like he doesn't throw his gum at the ref. He doesn't, you know, chuck anything on the ice or rip his shirt off. I don't know if you remember the old ECHL video where a coach gets downright topless. Like, Brind'Amour should do that. That would be entertaining. He's ripped. But, like, I don't know. He got mad. He got really upset. So, you know, where is the line between, you know, you're embarrassing the guy or showing him up? Apparently, that was it. But for me, I don't know. I enjoy that. Isn't it a little bit of fire?
To me, it's like, did I miss something? Like, did he say something that was personal or push the envelope? Because, yeah, I've seen that a bunch of times in many rinks at many different levels, quite frankly. All right, let's get to the Leafs, who have been playing next level. But it's the 1st of December.
Right.
Juicy matchup, one that maybe we'll see later in the spring if the Leafs can get out of the first round. Should Leafs fans make a relax, as Sid Sixera would say, and enjoy this ride, or should they feel reason to be skeptical?
Well, I think it's fair. It's fair to be skeptical, but really, if you're going to stress out now, you're just a stressed out type person. Like, things are great right now. This is as good as it's going to get until you get to the playoffs. So definitely time to enjoy it a little bit. You know, Sean McKenzie made a good point when we talked to him earlier, that it doesn't feel like previous runs, which is what you've been looking for, is like, are they different? And it doesn't feel like them, because it's not just goals per game that are way up. It's goals allowed per game, and they're very good defensively. Jack Campbell's obviously been exceptional, but it just feels like they're winning in a different way than they have in the past. And that's all you wanted to see as a Leafs fan. Not that they win more or that they win the President's Trophy. Just win differently, because the way you've been winning has not been good enough.
All right, well, there's something that Leafs fans, whether they're stressed or not, can be pretty happy about. Joey Anderson making his debut tonight in replacing Kyle Clifford. But the real cool part about it is that they took him on the road. They took him to the West Coast, LA, so that he could see his brother. They've been apart for large parts of the pandemic, as most families have been. You know, I am of the belief that in organizations, culture is built by little small steps that go a long way incrementally. I think this is a good one. When you think of that gesture, super small, but what it says about the club and the group, what comes to mind?
Well, it comes to mind that Kyle Dubas values this sort of thing, and that's something he wanted to make an effort at when he took over the organization. Is it's impossible to make the Toronto Maple Leafs feel like a small thing, but you still want to have that kind of close-knit community there. And so something like that is important. You know, they have the KHL pipeline guys that come over right now, and they say, come on over, and if it works, great. If not, we'll put you in a good position. And we've seen that they've moved Mikko Lehtinen to Columbus and Barabanov to San Jose, and kind of given guys, it didn't work out in Toronto, but we're not going to burn the bridge. We're going to show people that we have a human side. And I think back to my time with the Toronto Marlies, You know, I had an unfortunate situation in my family at a time when I was there, and I came to them. We had a couple of huge games leading up to playoffs and told them about it, and they put me on a plane that night, you know, put them at a competitive disadvantage given, you know, what my role was for them, but that wasn't their priority. So I have a soft spot for the way that they're trying to run this thing. They really are trying to make an effort in that regard. So bringing Anderson, I didn't even know that. That's a really cool story, and maybe they'll get rewarded with a confident, energetic Anderson tonight.
Yeah, hopefully. Looks to be a fun one tonight. Can't wait to see it. Thank you so much for joining the fun and joining me today.
Anytime. Thanks for having me, man.
Awesome. That was fun. All right, coming up, Jeff Blair will be in that seat. We're just over 5 hours now away from an official lockout in Major League Baseball. But what are the key issues at hand, and how long could this labor dispute last? We'll discuss with Jeff Blair next on the show. Welcome back. Line change, Born out, Blair in. And Jeff, it has been a busy start to free agency. Have you enjoyed the madness in baseball before it all shuts down today?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think a lot of people are looking at what we've seen in baseball recently, and now you're hearing people say, you know, maybe we should have a free agent deadline. I mean, God knows, I've got to think there's a network out there someplace that would be able to do a day-long free agent show, I would think, yes. Right, on baseball. So, yeah, it's been crazy. It's been weird because it's a hell of a way to start a labor dispute to go around spending billions of dollars. It really is. It's not exactly scorched earth.
Well, I mean, I just can't help but think to the last labor dispute, which wasn't that long ago, where the players and agents were talking about collusion and keeping salaries down. And it's hard to make that argument now, but there is a bit of a one percenter to this, where the middle class is really, you know, being the one that's hurt. What, if anything, do you think happens in this CBA to rectify, you know, the disparity in spending between teams and between top players and the rest of the clubs?
I mean, I think the biggest thing that has to happen, and this is the reason I'm pretty positive about this whole thing. I think this thing is going to be over the end of January, maybe early in February.
Really?
Don't think we're going to lose any games. I don't think there's a chance of losing any regular season games. Maybe spring training gets pushed back a bit. But here's the thing. Both sides understand that you have to figure out a way to make sure that more money gets into the hands of younger players sooner, because that's the way the game is going. So, I mean, there are a lot of issues. Obviously, there are a lot of issues that came out of the pandemic and the way the game came back. Bottom line is there is enough room and there's enough money in the system for people to sit down, and having the pressure of a real deadline is going to make a difference here. This deadline is irrelevant. Having a pressure of a real deadline, in other words, if we don't get it done here, we're not going to be in spring training. That's where the rubber meets the road. Both sides kind of understand this is the way it has to be done. I think what you're going to see is an overhaul of free agency. We seem to be getting this idea that there's a move towards some sort of combination of service time and age for free agency, something like a hybrid, a little bit, I guess, like the NHL and some other leagues have done. And salary arbitration is going to have to be overhauled. And both sides understand that. Now, the question is, can both sides get to a point where they're just unhappy enough that they can make a deal? And that's really what we're looking at. I mean, there's other stuff, the universal DH, playoff expansion, all of that stuff is interesting, and it's going to create a lot of hard feelings, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the bottom line is, how do you address arbitration? How do you address free agency? And I think the biggest thing the players want is they want teams to be forced to spend more to compete. And it sounds complicated, but I think there's a lot of common ground there. It's a $10 billion industry. When they struck in 1994, I looked at this today, and never mind 1994, 2001, it was a $4 billion industry. It's $10 billion. That's what the gross revenue of baseball was last year. So I think they'll come to a, you know, they'll come to an answer with the core economic issues, and then some of the other stuff, yeah, they'll get some of it done, some of it won't get done.
I'm surprised you're so optimistic, because yes, when they canceled the World Series, that was a long time ago in a different world, But in the middle of a pandemic, when many people were sitting at home and lost their jobs, they said, yeah, we're not going to play a bunch of games because we can't figure out our issues. So hopefully things have changed. I want to touch on a couple things with you. Hall of Fame. That conversation is back, and it will be, you know, the last time we have the conversation about Bonds and Clemens if they get in. It will be the first time we have the conversation about A-Rod and Ortiz. And I don't know how you look at some of them one way and others differently.
You can't.
So what happens then?
I mean, I'll do what I've done all along as a Hall of Fame voter. I'll vote for Bonds. I'll vote for Clemens. I'll vote for Ortiz. I'll vote for A-Rod. I have no problem. The Barry Bonds is the best player I've ever seen. Maybe it's my age, but I don't get worked up about the whole moral aspect of this thing about you know, who used steroids and who didn't use. I don't know who used steroids and who didn't use steroids. There are guys in the Hall of Fame that I suspect used steroids. It's never been proven or anything. Some of them, their names haven't even been linked to it, but there are guys in there. I look at them and I follow their career and I thought, yeah, that guy got really big really fast. So I prefer to look at the body of work of the player. And you cannot, in good conscience, if you're a Hall of Fame voter, look at Pons, look at Clemens, look at David Ortiz and Alex Rodriguez. You can't look at that and say, well, you know, yeah, they're really good players, but, you know, how much of it was legit, how much of it wasn't legit, and yeah, it's frustrating. And I kind of thought, Donovan, that as the voting pool got younger, we'd have less of this argument, and it doesn't seem to have changed. But just think about this. The idea that Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens could fall off the ballot in the same year makes no sense.
Yeah, I mean, some people like to draw a line at Ortiz because he didn't test positive and because it was before testing was widespread and it was really about getting a sample of where we were. And it really, quite frankly, shouldn't have been leaked.
Yep.
But many things shouldn't be leaked, and they are. But I hear what you're saying. I wonder, though, because Ortiz and A-Rod have been on TV, and they've rehabbed their images, and they've got a longer pathway for more young voters to get into the system if they end up getting in and the two this year don't. What do you think is going to happen?
What do I think is going to happen? I don't think Bonds makes it. I don't think Clemens makes it. I think Ortiz makes it. I don't know if he's the first ballot guy, and I don't want to get into the whole first ballot thing, because to me, if you're a Hall of Famer in the first ballot, you're a Hall of Famer in the second ballot. You're a Hall of Famer in the third ballot. Unfortunately,
but some would say that's enough punishment is making you wait. That's the punishment that you face is you have to wait.
I guess. Alex Rodriguez and David Ortiz never did anything to me to make me want to punish them. So I guess you could look at it that way. But no, I don't think Bonds gets in. I don't think Clemens gets in. I think Ortiz probably will get in. A-Rod's going to have to wait. And you know, the issue with this is there are other committees that serve as a pathway for a player to get into the Hall of Fame, right? There's the Veterans Committee and all this. The problem with that is the animus towards Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens is probably greater in the baseball industry than it is with the media. So there's a chance these guys don't get in ever, even through one of the committees. And that's, you know, look, we got a lot of bad people in the Hall of Fame. We have a lot of really bad people in the Hall of Fame. And I'm sorry, keeping out somebody who used performance-enhancing substances, it just doesn't wash with me. It's frustrating, and there are times where I look at it and go, do I really want to vote in this? Like, do I really need this? And then I think, that's an easy column, and it's something to talk about for a week. And I go, sure, why not?
Right. It's one of the debates that we have every year around this time. The other one is the Lou Marsh Award, which you are a voter of. And before we get to the debate of the many candidates that we have this year, we should talk about the award and its name, named after Lou Marsh, who was a reporter in this country who, and you know, I will surmise, but go to Gordon Miller, also a voter's timeline to get the full story. But essentially, in his time, said that the reports coming out of Nazi Germany of the treatment of Jews was overblown, and that it was a German matter, and that athletes who spoke up about it should leave it at that. Mm-hmm. Naturally, both at the time and now, there's lots of scrutiny. And the question is whether or not the award should be named after him. You, part of your brand is being part of that pool that, mm-hmm. that votes on it. What do you make of the conversation around changing the name of the award at this point?
I really have to admit that my first reaction, I saw those tweets and other people have mentioned it. My first reaction was embarrassment because I didn't know. I knew who Lou Marsh was, but I'd be lying if I said he did a great deal of research into Lou Marsh. When you read things that he wrote, and I mean, you don't even need to put it in context. It's just the name of the award has to be changed. It just does. And I think, you know, I know that the committee, the Toronto Star, I believe they've hired a professor from Western to look into this. And my sense is at some point there will be a name change. I would like to see a change this year. It's not my decision. But look, it's like anything else. When somebody presents you evidence like that and you look at it, you have to act. And, you know, I know there are people out there saying, well, it was so long. It doesn't matter when it was. You see the evidence, you act, you react, you make change. Part of coming to grips with your history is looking at something and changing it. We're all going through that. And I think in this case, it's absolutely the fact that it's an award that has a cachet and it does represent something in the Canadian sports community. It has to be changed.
Well said. And the sad part is it takes away from the conversation about the great athletes. And this year we have many.
I don't think it will, because I think this is one of the most exciting pools we've had. Like I was thinking about this the other day, athlete of the year. To me, as a voter, it's going to be Damian Warner. I put a lot of stock in what Olympic athletes do because they got one chance to be good. They've got a 3-day span or a 4-day span to be good. They don't get any second chance. And when an athlete does that, in the case of Damian Warner doing it over multiple days and multiple events, to me, it makes it a slam dunk. But it'll be an interesting finalist list because, to me, the Canadian sports story I'm going to remember the most this year, in addition to the Olympic success, is a success we've had in soccer. And normally when you talk about the Canadian men's soccer program, everybody goes Alphonso Davies. Canadian women's program, everybody goes Christine Sinclair. But Donovan, I know you follow this as well. That Canadian women's team that won the Olympics wasn't just Christine Sinclair. It was Steph LeBay. Kadisha Buchanan played every minute of every game. Mm-hmm. Ashley Lawrence has had a terrific year playing overseas. And then you look at the men's team. Alphonso Davies, great, great player. Man, Kyle Larin's had a really good year for Canada, scored some really big goals. So this is where it's going to get interesting, because I think the two soccer teams are the biggest sports story of the year for me in this country. And I don't know how you go about picking a winner to represent that group. But, you know, if you're asking me right now, I would be surprised if it isn't Damian Warner. How can you not pick a decathlete and a decathlete who set records? To me, it should be a slam dunk.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting about the soccer conversation is there are only so many people mm-hmm. that pay attention to the sport, and I wonder if some of those votes will cannibalize each other from the men's and women's
That's
side.
That's a really good point.
A week today mm-hmm. is the vote. We'll probably bother you again afterwards
okay.
to put it into context.
No problem.
But thank you once again for putting both baseball and all sports in this country into context for us. Thanks,
Jeff. Very much, Don.
All right, time for one last break. We'll get to Last Call and send it to Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. Coming up next, so many great options. Even Vladdy is on the ballot.
Vladdy's on the ballot. Thank you very much.
Welcome back to Tim and Friends. You see the plasma. Last call. Which
the
means
plasma.
Rubina, what do you got?
What I have
plasma
is
plasma screen?
Yeah, no. Okay. It's, right. Yeah, no, I get it. I get the reference. Okay. Ken Rosenthal is reporting that the Chicago Cubs are in talks with free agent right-hander Marcus Stroman.
Whoa.
The Jays fans always like to keep tabs on Marcus Stroman. I'm sure there's a contingent of Jays fans out there that are still holding out hope that Stroman will be back in a Blue Jays jersey, but it looks like the Cubs are the front runners at the moment. It's official. Wow. I'm getting word. It's official. Done. Marcus Stroman to the Cubs. Look how things happen on this show.
In Wrigleyville.
Yeah, Stroman tweeted it. I don't have to show you that tweet, but I can tell you that it is official. Marcus Stroman is going to the Chicago Cubs. How is that for breaking news here?
Yes, sir.
On Tim and Friends. Okay, let's move on to hockey. Huge game coming up on Sportsnet East, Ontario and West as the Leafs host the Avalanche on Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. Plenty of storylines heading into this one. The matchup of two of the hottest teams in the league, Nathan MacKinnon's return from injury, Nazem Kadri's return to Toronto. But the number one topic of discussion this morning was Auston Matthews showing up with a clean upper lip.
Morning, guys.
How's it feel to be mustaches there?
Oh, it feels a little different. I think it's going to take some time for me to get used to.
Getting some weird looks this morning.
Yeah, everybody kind of gave it a little bit of a double take. I don't know. It definitely feels weird. It's been a while.
Any chirps?
I don't know. I look a little bit younger, I think, but I'd have to agree. I feel like I'm 16 again.
Now to his credit, Matthews shaved his mustache as part of his Movember campaign, which raised almost $150,000. DJ, you saw him there, clean shaven. Should he grow the stash back is the question.
I like a clean look.
Do you?
So, I do, yeah. Okay. So I like the way he looks there. It looks a bit younger, but he grows it back and then shaves it next Movember to raise even more money. I think that's the play.
Yeah, does it every year. Idea. That's a good idea. He looks a bit like a rookie there. Like, I'm getting, like, scores four goals against Ottawa type vibes looking at that picture. Like, he looks super young. It's crazy what a mustache can do to one person. Your goatee, by the way, looks fantastic, I just have to say.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm trimming it.
Yeah. The Raptors continued last night. Struggles continued last night as they lost at home to the Memphis Grizzlies. Toronto now 2-8 at Scotiabank Arena, the second worst home record in the NBA. A lot of problems with what the Raptors did last night. What was the worst part of the loss, DJ?
Oh, worst start, man. I mean, listen, it didn't start well. The Scotty Barnes leading the troops. You know, we were trying to intimidate the opposition. We're trying to get hype, and we're slipping. We're falling on the carpet. Now, in fairness, I have been in that tunnel, and it is quite tight. It is an aggressive turn to go from locker room through the expensive seats to the court. But I love how he also looked around. Hey, did anyone else see that? Yeah, of course we did. So it was a bad start, but also it didn't end well. Nothing that the Raptors did. The Grizzlies tried to appropriate our lingo, which we no longer use and really never used. Did you see this?
Yeah.
King of the dot. First of all, and I love Dylan Brooks and his swag and not so much, you know, the fashion choice there, but no one calls it the dot. No one ever calls it the dot. No one calls it T dot anymore or T.O. They might as well have said on fleek in this tweet. Like, why can't we have nice things is my question.
Well, he also shot 5 of 18 from the field.
There's that.
Congratulations, you won the game. But, I mean, it's not like the Memphis Grizzlies come here all the time and, like, they put up statement performances. Like, they beat a shorthanded Raptors team and he shot 5 of 18 from the field. Love Dylan Brooks, like you. He's Canadian. Mississauga. Represent, right? But I didn't feel bad at all. Not impressed. King of the North is what they originally had, and then they changed it to the dot. So, yeah, I didn't get it. Okay, earlier this week, Lionel Messi was awarded the Ballon d'Or for the seventh time in his career, and that decision has sparked a lot of debate in the soccer world. Many people felt Bayern Munich's Robert Lewandowski deserved the award, which was not handed out in 2020 due to the pandemic. And today, Lewandowski's teammate Alphonso Davies said, quote, "To me, it doesn't make sense. I'm going to leave it at that, because if I start talking about it, a lot of people's feelings are going to get hurt. Lewandowski deserved to win. At least give the guy the Ballon d'Or from last year."
Fraud.
It couldn't fit on the board, but he also said that.
Do you agree? So I take it you do agree with
him. I do agree. And listen, I interviewed Alphonso before he made the move to the Bundesliga, and he talked about the fact that playing on big nights in Europe. The one thing that he was super, super excited but nervous about was playing against Leo Messi because it's an idol of his. So he's saying that knowing that he has so much respect for Messi, but he's correct. It really isn't close. For the body of work over the last 2 years, it was an obvious choice and an odd one, no question.
Yeah, I mean, I hear your point, but just rename the award the Lionel Messi Award. Guy's got seven of them. How's that for a trophy case? And that's just one thing that he's got in the trophy case. Pretty impressive.
Messi said himself he shouldn't have won it.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
You know what else is true?
What's true?
That's it for us.
Oh, no, that's devastating.
Our award winner, Carolyn Cameron, and the panel are standing by with Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. Not sure she's won an award, but she should. Avs and Leafs on Sportsnet, while the Canucks and Sens are on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet Pacific. Later, we've got Penguins and Oilers on Sportsnet 1, Sportsnet 360, and Sportsnet. Enjoy it all. We'll talk tomorrow.